Okay, so I'm not going to be able to provide you an answer which method is better, transgenic or non-transgenic, for horticultural crop improvement. But I'm going to present some of the case studies recently done or still continues going on in our laboratory. Although the global planting of transgenic plants has increased drastically since 1996, almost a wonderful increase. But the debate over transgenic crop plants worldwide is getting hotter and hotter. This is something I gathered from internet. Some Chinese believe that if we eat transgenic food, we're going to become sterile. That's probably explain why Chinese don't eat much transgenic. That's why we have, in China, have a bigger population, where in U.S. we have consumed transgenic plants for 17 years. Our population is really not increased much. So, now, one approach we have been taking in recent years is that to address the concerns over transgenic plants, some people think it's not safe to eat. Some people, and there were cases to demonstrate that the gene flow problems. So we have developed a technology called gene deleter technology. We can delete all transgenes from pollen and seeds once the function of transgenes are completed. So as shown here, this is the current art of transgenic plant technology. Red color indicated that everything indicated transgenic. The green color indicated they do not contain transgenic. So here is a pollen. The blue color indicated the presence of transgene. Now without gene deleter, the transgene can be present in pollen or other organs. With our gene deleter, which is a pollen specific, seed specific, we can have all transgene eliminated from pollen and as well as from seeds. So this is with our gene deleter technology. We have published this. We also have recently done field evaluation for the technology in Connecticut for 3 years, and it works well. We have not published field data yet. We would like to extend the technology to the other crop plants, particularly horticultural plants, so that we can eliminate all transgenes from edible part of horticultural plants. This piece of the slides was provided by Dr. Ziliu Deng from Hulan Agricultural University in China. He has used our seed and pollen-specific gene deleter system to transform citrus. He demonstrated that most of the tissues in citrus fruits transgene can be deleted, but he should use fruit-specific promoters to control our gene deleter system, but he is doing that. So we hope that with the fruit-specific promoter, he can delete all the transgenes from fruit tissues. So that's the one approach we've been taking, which is to make transgenic plants safer to plant or to eat. The second approach we have taken, Dr. Wild has talked about this a little bit already, so there are a little bit overlap. That is to make traditional mutation breeding or non-transgenic technique more efficient. I'm going to briefly talk about two different approaches. One is when you have a population of mutants created by EMS or gamma phosphoneutron, those mutagens, if you have recessive mutations, how can you effectively, efficiently isolate or recover these mutants? I'm going to briefly talk about the high-resolution DNA melt analysis and the DNA sequence method. The another one is that dominant mutation. As the progresses in recent years in the gene functions, we now know a lot of phenotype are dominant. Therefore, we can also easily isolate some of the mutants easily. Now, all this method requires we know the DNA sequence. We also know the function of the genes. here, Dr. Milt already talking about, Wild already talking about this high resolution DNA melt analysis. So I'm not going to repeat this part. And here shows that if you have a Y-type plant, when you have, you increase the temperature, the melting temperature, the fluorescence signal going to be reduced. So here is fluorescence signal, here is the temperature, as you can see, temperature increase. So you have a mixture, you have a DNA, if everything is a Y-type DNA, now this is a melting curve. Now if you have some mutant DNA mixed in with Y-type, the melting curve is going to shift. Now currently what we can achieve is 1 out of 50. It means if we have 50 plants, if one of them are mutants, we can tell easily just by this simple method. But we are hoping that we can further increase resolution of this. For instance, there are compounds that can be inserted into the mismatch of a DNA molecule as shown here. If you have mutations, you have a mismatch, so compounds like this can be inserted. That's going to increase the hydrogen bonds, number of hydrogen bonds, and that actually going to theoretically should make the DNA melt slower. So as such, we hope that we can probably reach higher efficiency, higher resolution, such as if you have one mutant in 500 plants, you still be able to see the difference in the melting curve. So we are currently work on this, and we hope this is going to help. So that is our DNA melt analysis. Another method that we are developing is to use a DNA sequencing-based method to detect desirable mutations or mutants from a population. As the DNA sequencing gets less and less expensive, now it's possible to do that. We have done some preliminary work. Our data suggests it is possible to detect one plant with desirable mutants in a population of 500 or 1,000 plants. Within the next several months, we should be able to publish these results. So this is going to further enhance our efficiency to isolate mutant plants from a population of the mutants. So that is to deal with recessive mutation from a mutant population, how effectively, efficiently isolate desirable mutants. Another method that we are using is to select dominant mutation or mutant plants based on easily identifiable phenotypes. For instance, that Wild has already talked about gibberellin plants, dwarf. We know that anything you have mutation in the GA pathway or GA signaling pathway, you can create a dwarf mutations. And many of those genes involved in signaling pathway, in fact, can create a dominant mutation. That means you don't have to have a homozygous line. You can see the phenotype. The dwarf phenotype is highly desirable in many fruit or ornamental crop plants. So we use that, So the many of you know that Green Revolution, actually one of the important traits in Green Revolution is dwarf or semi-dwarf mutants of wheat, rice, and GA deficient or insensitive mutants are the molecular basis of these dwarf or semi-dwarf mutants. And one of the proteins involved in GA pathway is called GAI. If you have a mutation in this gene, in this protein, you will have different degree of dwarfness, as shown here. This erythrocytosis, you can have, depends on where you have a mutation, you can have a different height of the plant. And this is a dominant. So with that concept, we create a mutant population seeds of perennial ryegrass. This is not self-comparable, so you cannot get homozygous. But since they are dominant, so we easily identify a large number of dwarf mutants, as shown here. And Chandra is here. He is one of the isolated started this work. And so we have identified some of the mutants which require less mowing, less irrigation in order to shed tolerance because they are dwarf. So we have around 50 different types of mutants. We isolate easily because the phenotype is dominant. Now there are many other genes. Now we know that they show dominant phenotype where you can use a similar method to isolate. So that is to deal with totally non-transgenic approach, mutation breeding, and how to effectively, efficiently isolate and recover those desirable mutants. Now third approach we are taking is use genome editing technology. Now particularly CRISPR technique, this has become extremely popular since the beginning of 2013. There are thousands of publications out already that use this technology, and which you can create targeted mutations. And here shows you the simple principle of this technology. Here is the Cas9 protein needle counter, and this RNA guided, so this is called sgRNA, and this part of the sgRNA molecule can be matched with your target genome sequence. As such, you have enzyme Cas9 bound to this region. Therefore, going to break DNA, double-stranded DNA molecule, and going to put it together. Now, it's going to create either deletion or insertion mutations. Therefore, you can inactivate a gene. We have created anthocyanin tobacco plants. We use that as a model to see CRISPR, how the CRISPR system works. And use these plants, we transfer the sgRNA target anthocyanin gene, and the case now we find around 70-80% of transgenic shoots lost anthocyanin gene function, so which indicates very effective. Now this, a lot of publication already out there to show how effective or highly effective of this system. However, to use the CRISPR technique in horticultural plants such as citrus, now here at least some information about citrus, particularly huanglongbin, greening diseases, it has caused huge damage for the citrus industry in this country, particularly in Florida. So we are working with people at the University of Florida to develop or use CRISPR technologies to create huanglongbin resistant cultivars. But one of the challenges is that if you use CRISPR, if you transfer the CRISPR system into citrus, you can create a mutant. Your trait is non-transgenic, but has CRISPR Cas9 gene in there. Those transgenes can be more dangerous than your other transgenes. So one thing we need to address is to either get rid of the Cas9 system so that the so the mutant plants will be totally non-transgenic, or use other different method to do the job. So the CRISPR technology, for many people, I think is a very powerful technique, but for perennial crop plants, particularly for such plants such like citrus, is not easy in order to use this technique. Because I said Cas9 in the plants can be more dangerous than your sweet genes. So with all this technique I presented, now I'm going to present a couple of the cases or in our laboratory, transgenic versus transgenic, give you some feelings. One slide here shows you that since 1992, the first horticultural transgenic plant flavor silver tomato has been commercialized. In fact, up to 2015, we don't have many transgenic horticultural crop plants commercialized or deregulated. There are quite a few reasons. Many of you know, one is too expensive to go through a regular process. Another one is public acceptance. And I do see we're going to face a lot of challenges down the road using transgenic technologies. In my own case, we have developed seedless fruit technology back in 1998. And the technology can improve the fruit crop quality and yield of many different types of fruit crops. And we showed in tomato, in tobacco, in watermelon works well. And I thought this technology can be very significant for the horticultural crop plants. Unfortunately, it has not been commercialized because of some of the issues we have, I just mentioned. On the other hand, several years ago, we started to work with invasive plants, burning bush, which is a very popular plant in this country, but highly invasive. We do have transgenic tools to do this, but finally I gave up transgenic approach. I use traditional approach. We produce triploid plants, and we are likely going to release these plants in 2 years. They are non-transgenic, so there is no regulation. It's, we don't need any deregulation from government. And this was well received when we published this. Associated Press have an article, and for this particular article, there's more than 300,000 items on the Google. If you do Google search at that time, there are many other articles or report our finding. So transgenic, we have seedless technology, I think it's more useful, but not really do well for commercialization. This non-transgenic approach is well received, and we will probably release very soon. So you can see the difference between transgenic and non-transgenic. Now back to citrus. People think that transgenic approach is going to be the best, or I believe, to address the hornworm bean diseases. However, the campaign against transgenic citrus already started. This is downloaded from the internet. And you can see we're going to face the problems that. So if I compare transgenic and non-transgenic approach for the horticultural crop improvement, I think a transgenic plant is highly effective, and they have unlimited potential. So it's extremely powerful, the most powerful technique for crop improvement. However, there is concerns and issues. Traditional approach, non-transgenic approach, is not very efficient, and also somewhat limited. You only can work with the genes already in the plants, already in the crop plants. So, however, there are advantages because no regulation or don't need to have go through deregulation processes. Now, CRISPR technology is also highly effective, but limited. Again, you only can work with genes already in that particular plants, manipulated them. So, if I talk about the deregulation or the problems or advantage, transgenic deregulation is very expensive. That's the problem we have faced for horticultural transgenic plants, strong opposition. And we have technologies which, such as gene denature, can eliminate transgenes in edible part, hopefully in the future. That may be help, but I'm still not sure yet. Traditional approach, which is, as I said, is not extremely efficient, but with some of the new technology, such as the method I mentioned to effectively, efficiently recover mutants from a population of mutant plants, it might be highly efficient. Now, CRISPR, as said, the problem is that if you have Cas9 left in the genome, it can be more dangerous. So we need to work out strategies to address that concern before it can be used in perennial horticultural crop plants, but it will also be highly effective. So that's my conclusion. There is no answer which one is better. Depends. What do you do? Thank you.
Well, since we are on time, we have you can take a couple of questions.
Yes, good.
I have one question about identifying the recessive mutant you mentioned.
Yeah.
So one of the techniques you used is by monitoring the DNA melting temperature. So I'm just curious, what if we have contamination like bacteria DNA in your plant DNA, will this method still going to be effective?
The method is based on the PCR product. So you suppose you're going to target on you wanted to have a mutation in one particular gene, so you're going to design primers to amplify that piece of DNA. So if you have a contamination of bacteria, if they don't have the same type of gene, you'll not be able to amplify them. So it's not that you use the mixture of genomic DNA and then you do that analysis. I did not go through the details because a lot of information behind, but you amplify the target DNA, use PCR reactions. Basically, you purified the DNA sequence to some extent.
What gene is your target?
Target depends on the phenotype you're looking for, such as the ones I'm talking about, the GA signaling pathway genes. If you have GAI, so you're going to design the primers to amplify the GAI sequence, and then you do the melting analysis. You have to know the DNA sequence, you have to know the gene, you have to know their function. You know you have mutation in that gene, and then you have certain phenotype. Like Dr. Wild already talked about, he's working on other phenotypes, so he knows those genes. Like in our case, oil knows those genes. Now, there are a lot of genes, we know the function. Particularly if you look at the erodotus literature, rice literature, there's a model plants, there are functions of many genes we already know.
Last question from Jude.
I have two questions.
Yes.
What are your target genes in citrus for Huahuang Ming? And what actually is the danger of still having the CRISPR?
Okay, the first question is that you probably have to ask Fred. I'm going to be responsible for the technology development. I'm not going to really take care about which target genes. He's going to tell me which genes. Fred is going to tell me which genes. So ask Fred, when you go back, which genes are going to target. We currently use the Cronos biosynthetic genes as our model system to work out this technology. Now, second question is, why Cas9 present in the plants like a citrus is going to be dangerous? Now, Cas9, you think about that. Cas9 protein, if you have sgRNA, which is a small piece of RNA, can create mutations. The anti-GMO people are going to definitely have concerns. It means theoretically, if we eat the product contain Cas9 protein, they think that can create a mutation in our cell, in human cells. Because you could have theoretically small piece of RNA could match that with certain DNA in our cell. Although I don't believe that. But you can, that is actually for them is more dangerous. So without getting rid of that, you'll not be able to commercialize. USDA's policy is that if you don't have those sequences in there, that's pretty much like a non-transgenic. But if you have that sequence in there, it is transgenic. And it can be more dangerous for some people, not for me.
Well, thank you. We have to stay on track. So Dr. Lee will be around.